Hey builders, welcome to another episode of the People of Growth podcast. I'm your host, Nate Elliott. Our guest today is someone I look up to a lot and think is really cool. Her name is Koki Hasiotis. She is the chief of staff at The Block, the founder and CEO of Lasagna Consulting, and an advisor for FinTech Today. This was a super fun and funny conversation. I really enjoyed it, learned a ton from her, and I really just can't wait for you guys to hear this. So let's just jump right in and enjoy the show. Koki, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Yeah, great. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited to chat with you. You are like an insane person to me because you're doing so many cool things. Like I follow you on Twitter and I see all the stuff that you're doing. And it's wild to me that you're able to do so many incredible things. Like I think a lot of people would look at you and all the things you're doing and be like, oh, that's a dream job. Oh, that's a dream job. Oh, that's a dream job. And you have these three incredible things that you're working on. I would love for you to tell people who you are and what you do.
First of all, I'm super flattered. I'm not that cool. I am funny on Twitter though, and I do get a lot of personal gratification from people laughing at my jokes. So that's one of them. I do a couple of things. I'll tell you first about The Block. I'm the chief of staff of The Block, which is crypto and digital assets information services company. We do news research and it is super, super fun. And I'm learning hard and fast about crypto and how to be an operator.
Yeah.
Which I thought I had gotten my crash course in several times already and I got it again.
Awesome.
I'm the founder and CEO of Lasagna. Lasagna is right now a consultancy. We'll see what it turns into, but mission-driven consultancy that aims to be the nexus point for banking as a service as that kind of industry grows in the US, particularly on behalf of and for MDIs and CDFIs.
Okay.
So helping minority depository institutions kind of get involved in this to make sure the money is going into different places than it did the first time we built the financial institutions. And then the last couple of things I do is I'm an advisor for a couple of fintechs. So I advise FinTech Today and I write for them every Friday. Make sure to catch me in your inbox. I'm really annoying.
I always like to see your Friday edition come through. So
Thank you so much for subscribing. It means a lot. The other company I advise is called Ajara. They are a crypto investment app for middle-class Francophone Africans based out of Cameroon. And that's a total passion project for me.
That's awesome.
I really just like their CEO. I feel like I add absolutely no value, but I love her so much and I want to see her succeed. So I give her everything I can.
That's awesome. So my big question from there is like, I try to put myself in the shoes of the listener, maybe somebody that's in college like I am and about to start a career. And I see you doing these cool things and I go look at your LinkedIn and I try to fill in the gaps. Could you give us maybe a sense of how you came to do such cool things? Like how did you maybe find your passion and how did you find these roles?
Yeah, so I had to do a bunch of really uncool things first. And I think that's pretty evident if you internet stalk me even a little bit. I thought I was going to law school. I always thought from the time I was five, I was like, yeah, I'm going to law school. And then I went to college with the anticipation of going to law school. So I studied international relations. Then I graduated from college and was like, I need a little break. So I went to be a paralegal for 2 years. And it was going to awful. Awful. So I just didn't. Like, that wasn't going to happen for me. I did spend 2 years in the law firm and it has helped me, like, in terms of constructing the way I think. Yeah. But my God, no.
I apologize. I wish I would have realized that a while ago.
I'm sorry, sweetie. You're going to be great.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
I have a whole theory on where law is going and I'm excited about that, but I'll leave that.
We can chat about that another time.
We can. You can text me. Yeah. So I really did think that was going to happen and it didn't. So I really had to pivot 2 years out of college. And I lived in New York and I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm moving to London. So I moved to London and I took the first job I got, which actually was handy. That job was at a capital markets trade association, where basically I worked with European investment banks and the regulators to help them find some kind of center point on regulation, make sure everything was normal. And I did that for financial crime and technology. So the thing that it was great for is I got a crash course on how investment works.
Yeah.
That came in handy later.
Did you know much about it when you started?
No. Day one, I barely had a bank account. Like, we're okay. Not talking about a sophisticated person here. And I'm barely kidding. I didn't know anything. And it was such an incredible learning curve. Like, I still rely on a lot of the stuff that I learned there almost every day. But ultimately, when you're dealing with investment banks and you're dealing with the regulators, you're just talking about little tiny provisions that help rich white men get richer. And that's not really my game.
Yeah.
So after taking what I could from that job, I left and went to Boston Consulting Group, where I ran a global fintech research team. That was pretty cool. I had an amazing amount of data on where venture was going all over the world. Yeah, that was cool. And I got to see where things were going. And this kind of started to ignite something inside me. I was like, huh, US is looking a little weird. Because I'm sitting in London, of course. So I'm surrounded by Monzo and Starling and Revolut. And they're all kind of coming up in the world. And not only coming up, they're taking over in a lot of ways. You see them everywhere. They're such a big deal. They're like celebrities. And I was like, huh, weird that that's not happening in the US. So I left BCG. I went to 11FS. I moved with 11FS to New York. That was kind of serendipity. It just worked out.
Yeah.
We launched their American program, where I learned a lot quick. It became super evident to me super fast that infrastructure in the US is totally broken. There's too many banks, too many customers, but not enough reach.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a million problems to solve, and there are a lot of interesting people solving them. So that's kind of how I got to Lasagna, at least, is that that became a very focused center point for me of things I really care about, because it's one of the only things in finance that has this combo effort of this is good for the bank, this is good for the consumer, and this has a social justice angle. And that is so rare in fact that I can't think of another example.
Yeah, totally. It's so hard because, I mean, when you have anything where we're talking about people making tons and tons of money, usually it's the people that have lots and lots of money that are leading that conversation and driving that in a certain direction, and they have the power and ability to control the infrastructure. And so I think that you are, like, you're spot on that there's, I couldn't think of another opportunity like this where you have an opportunity to make an impact on something that you're knowledgeable about in a way that you care about. So I think that that's just really cool.
Yeah, it's important to me, and it's super fun also. So win-win.
You started Lasagna, you were at 11FS, and then did you go from 11FS to The Block? Is that correct?
No. Bit of a rocky road, and you'll find that that's kind of the underlying tenor of this whole story. Is it's very easy for me to tell this story now in hindsight and say, "Oh, this was all a huge success." But it wasn't. And that's one of those things that I like to get out of the way early. I don't like to pretend like I'm this incredible human being who knew what they were doing all the time, because I didn't and I don't. But yeah, I 11FS had to shut down their American program due to COVID. I got laid off. No hard feelings. That's how it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had to pay rent. And I had this expertise that was brand new and I cared about it. So I started playing around with consulting, and then I was like, wait, shit. I can do something here. There's a lot here. So yeah, I've been pulling together what is essentially the mission in the last 3 weeks, which I'm really excited about. And I have a first team member who is not yet announced, and working on building that out a little bit more. And there's exciting things to come.
Yeah, that's so exciting. But I imagine that that must have been a really hard, like, obstacle to deal with. Just as you're starting to, I mean, you're finding this thing that you're really interested in, that you're really passionate about, and then it's like, oh, but you can't do it here anymore. Like, that can't be an easy thing to stomach. So what framework did you use to make the most of that situation?
Honestly, I was just determined. There was nothing more. There was nothing less. It was just, I want to keep doing this. And so I did. I don't think I've changed how I think about work a lot over many years. And I don't think that work stops at work. At least not for me. Work is within me. What I do is my work, no matter where it is. And I carry it with me onwards. Everyone has a tough time at work every now and again. And this wasn't insurmountable.
Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense to me. And I know when I was when I was like a younger person thinking about, oh, what do I want out of life? What am I going to do for a career? I thought, oh, I'll just pick something that'll make me a lot of money and that I'll have a good life style. And I'll just run with that because it's just work. And now here I am like 6 years later thinking I could never have been a dentist ever. I would hate my life. And I actually can't, that's even part of law school. Like I know I could go be a good lawyer, but I will never enjoy what I'm working on. And I know that when I enjoy what I'm working on, I'm happy even when I'm working. And I don't want to spend 40, 60, 80 hours a week working on something that makes me want to punch myself in the face. Mm-hmm. So how would you, I guess, recommend people find that? Because I still feel like I'm trying to find that. And I know that's kind of a lot of people, I don't think ever find a way to make work something that they don't hate. So how did you, I guess, kind of find your zone?
So I guess it starts with the kind of idea that I don't believe happiness is linear. I think that we have peaks and troughs like in anything else. So even if I do, and I have found something I really and truly care about, I might not always care about it. I might not always love it. Not every day is going to be sunshine and rainbows. But I do think that having a mission and having my own mission, which was really formulated over the last year, helped drive me to a point where it's like, this is important work. It's what my mother always says. She says, find work worth doing.
Yeah.
And that to me is kind of more important than happiness, because happiness comes and goes. And there are a lot of factors that determine happiness. I'm sure someone smarter than me has something smart to say about that. But how did I get to that? I got lucky for now, but it's not forever.
That makes a lot of sense. Man, you've done some really cool things. I think that's really helpful insight. I have to go home and, or not go home, but I have to, after this, think about, okay, what important work do I want to do? And that's a really hard question. So thank you for that.
It is hard.
I would love to hear you talk a little bit about, mostly for selfish reasons, because I'm really curious, but you are the chief of staff at The Block. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you like it there. You're doing cool things. Why was a chief of staff role something that was a fit for you?
Yeah, I'm crazy. So first of all, the chief of staff role was just what it was. You know, I really love The Block. Like, I really love the team. I get along with them insanely well. And they are one of the only, I think pretty much the only institution I've ever interviewed with that treated me like an equal from the day one. Okay. And I was like, yep, I'm going to go work there. And I've never been a crypto person. I'm trying. I think it's interesting. I invested in Bitcoin. I'm apparently bullish now.
That's awesome.
That's what they call me in the group Slack. But chief of staff role is kind of fun. I'm a generalist. I'm a true generalist. I've written about this a lot of times, but basically my kind of personal ethos is variety or I'll die. And I get that with The Block. I get to play with all sorts of different things. I get to look at the product. I get to play with the marketing. I get to talk to the editorial team. I get to pay the bills, all sorts of random stuff that I get to do on a daily basis, and I can make of it what I want to make of it. So frankly, it's a great role for me. And it's a good fit.
So what do you think, if there's one attribute for a person to be good at that role, how would you sum it up in terms of if you're not this, then you can't be a good chief of staff?
If you can't look at your phone while you're talking to somebody, then you can't be a chief of staff.
Fair. That's fair. Okay. Well, I want to move on to something a little more fun, less career oriented, less cokey oriented. Squash. What in the world is squash?
Squash is a sport.
I know that. I think it's in they play it in The Office at one point, but I have no idea what the rules are or even how it is a thing.
So the reason Nate's bringing this up for listeners is that I was a competitive squash player who played in millions of tournaments when I was in high school and was a captain of my team. And Nate has decided to bring this all out and all this trauma is back now. No, basically squash is like racquetball if you have an anger problem because the ball's harder and it doesn't go as far.
Okay.
It's played primarily in the UK, in India, and in the northeast of the United States. It is in the Western world, at least for white people. And it's a fun game if you like to hit things.
So I've never seen or like most of the games I played or learned in school or something, but squash has never been on that list. Was that because I think you grew up in the Northeast, if I'm correct, is that how you became exposed to it and you just liked it and were good at it or what?
You know what it was? I'm so embarrassed. I played tennis because my mom always played tennis. So I would go to her tennis club and play tennis and she got me lessons and I would hit the ball with such a fury that it would go flying. And they'd be like, hey, Coke, sweetie, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I just like it to go flying. And they're like, okay, we're going to put you in this other room with a harder ball that's harder to get to go further. And I was like,
That's awesome. I think I need to play. I like racquetball. But I end up just, it's all over the place. So maybe maybe squash would be a good fit.
It's impossible not to want to hit it as hard as possible.
Yeah, I love it. So on the topic of athletics, I told you I was going to ask this question and now I have to answer it. In 2009, you ran the 100 meter dash in 15.26 seconds. That's pretty fast. At least like, I don't remember what good times are from being in high school. I know I don't think I could ever run it that fast. What would your time be if you had to run today?
All right. I'll answer that question in two parts. The first part is I Googled it. It's not that fast. And the second part is if I had to run it today, I would think 15 hours and 26 minutes.
That's fair. I'm not a runner at all. So running even for 15 seconds sounds quite terrible.
Yeah, I'm not a runner either. I was a good sprinter. And then the girl who was supposed to run the 800 meter dash, which is for runners, never showed up to the meets. So I always had to run them. And you can't walk. Like you actively can't walk. So I'd be like shuffling along, couldn't breathe because you're supposed to have like a runner's body too, right? And you know, your viewers can't see me. I'm about 3 feet high. I don't have long legs, so I'd have to truck it, and I was barely getting anywhere. Anyway, screw that girl, though.
That, I don't know. Like, 800 meters is far too far to run. Like, way too far.
I only run now if it, like, starts raining and I happen to be holding a pizza and I don't want it to get wet. Like, that's it.
Only for food. I would run for fear or food. Probably those are the only two things.
I'm not sure I would go for fear. I'd be like, all right, this is it.
That's fair, but I saw a cougar the other day, a mountain lion, and that was at like 50 yards and that was far too close.
That's pretty cool though.
Yeah, it was really cool, but it's also very, very intimidating. Those are not house cats.
Yeah, my parents live in Phoenix, so we get mountain lions and lynxes around the house.
Yeah.
Both my house cats think that's what they are. They are wrong.
No.
But I don't run away from them. I'm like, yeah, maul me, let's go.
having been in that situation, it is uncomfortable having to be in an area where you can see them and then you can't see them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, I don't know where they are anymore. And they probably know where I am. So
yeah, they can smell me and I'm useless.
Yep. Very scary. Well, I would love to pick your brain a little bit more before we run out of time. Mm-hmm. So get this back on track. Okay. You did these jobs that you did. First of all, you went to school for international relations. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. And then you went to work in a job that like I have a finance background a little bit. I'm in law school. I understand regulations and that still seems way out of my depth. How did you go do something without having like the background for it and do well at it? And like, can you explain to me how you're able to go do these different things without having tons of experience and doing well at them?
Yeah, I would say this is probably the strength area that I'm most proud of. I'm unafraid. And the reason I'm unafraid is because I have moved a million times. I have moved countries, I have moved cities, I have moved everything all the time, constantly, my entire life. So I'm actually just not scared of new at all. The first time I moved internationally alone without my family, I was 17 years old. I had two bags. I showed up. Wow. I was like, oh, shit. But it's an amazing thing. It's an amazing feat of our ability to just deal with things. So I was totally fine. Everything was totally fine. Of course, everyone has bad days, but being able to land on my feet and having done it a couple of times now, I'm just not scared. Like, there's always going to be things that I don't know. There's always going to be a smarter person in the room. I am not the smartest person in the world. I'm hardly the smartest person in the room right now, and I'm the only one here. I just think, I think being a little bit fearless is kind of an important quality.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And I think if there's a common theme throughout interviewing extraordinary people like yourself, I've found that getting over that fear and just being like, you know what, like, if I fail, I fail, or this won't suck as bad as I think it is. Like that is a common theme throughout people that do incredible things, is they don't let the fear of what could happen get in the way of trying something new. So,
but I won't pretend like I don't get imposter syndrome. I'm not going to pretend like I'm this amazing person that doesn't experience regular anxiety like everyone else does. First of all, it's 2020. We all have it. Secondly, I'm not going to pretend like I've never gotten imposter syndrome. I've had it every day for years.
Yeah.
I just think like trying new things doesn't faze me. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't scare me anymore.
Is there something you tell yourself when you have, like, I don't know, when you wake up and you're like, frick, like, why would they give me this job? Or what am I doing? Like, I'm not qualified for this. Cause I know I think that sometimes, and I'm like, crap, I'm supposed to tell myself something. And sometimes I don't have the answer. And I think a lot of people get that imposter syndrome and they let it consume them. So what do you tell yourself?
Are you asking for my mantra?
Sure. Okay. Whatever it is, God or like bless. what's that framework?
I have one. It's funny. I will share it. But thank you to Lizzo for giving it to me. I just wake up every morning and I'm like, I'm that bitch. Every day.
Love it. I might have to steal that. I might have to steal that.
Yeah, you should. I go into my boyfriend works in the bedroom of our apartment. I go in there 3 times a day and I'm like, "Hey, am I still that bitch?" He's like, yeah.
I love it. Oh, that's, I think that's really helpful. I really do. Cause I think having like being able to deal with those, like that internal conflict of like, crap, like, I don't know, that anxiety or that worry in yourself, like, am I good enough for this? Or should I even be doing this? I don't know. I deal with that all the time. And I think a lot of people do, and that's common. So being able to fight through that is an important part of like being a successful human being.
Yeah. And honestly, there are days where I am not that bitch. There have been years where I'm not that bitch. And I think I've wasted so much time being in my own head. If I had 5 years ago just been like, shut up, let's go.
Yep.
I would be in a much different position. I probably would have ended up somewhere nearby, but I would be in a much different position mentally, and I would have started a company a lot sooner.
Yeah.
It was just paralyzing self-doubt for absolutely no reason based on nothing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that it's helpful for people to hear someone like you say that, because you are doing really cool things, and to know that, oh man, like if I'm in a rough patch and I have self-doubt and I'm not sure of myself. Well, Koki went through it and look where she is. Like if she can do it, I can do it. So I think that's really helpful to hear that from you.
Yeah. I also just really hate it when founders are like, when I was 5, I noticed that there was a problem with SMB underwriting. I'm like,
yes.
The fuck when you were 5? I'm like, when I was 25, I was blackout drunk in a cab in London trying to find my way home. Like, there's no playbook. Yep. There's no playbook. Nobody's more extraordinary than you are. In fact, everyone in themselves is as extraordinary as they can be. They just have to unlock that own potential.
Wow. You can put that on a billboard.
Yeah, actually come see me. I'm the new Tony Robbins.
Well, I really appreciate that. And I think that's super, super helpful. I have one final question for you. I want to make sure we end this on time. So you have done really, really cool things. Like, first of all, like Boston Consulting Group is probably like thousands of people's dream job, whether that's right or wrong. But like, you've worked at places that I can't imagine is easy to get a job at and done things that people would love to do. How did you get hired? Like, what is it about you, or how did you present yourself or pitch yourself so that they chose you?
I have two secrets to a successful interview. My first is make them laugh twice. It's memorable. They've seen a lot of people that day. They've dealt with a lot of bullshit. Make them laugh twice. If you get two laughs, you're probably getting a job. The second thing I do, if you can't tell from this entire experience, I talk really, really fast and I answer really quickly. I take a deep breath and then I say, that's an interesting question. And that buys me just enough time to answer the question and actually think through what I'm going to say, which is obviously not my nature.
No, that's really smart. I think that's like incredibly tactical, but incredibly helpful, because so many, I don't know, I've been into interviews and like, I like to make people laugh. I think that's like my personality is like, I want people to like me, but there's so much like bad advice for job interviews. It's like, be really formal and don't offend them. Or like, I don't know. I think if you make a joke, then they know if they like you or not. If they don't like your sense of humor, like you probably don't want to work there anyway, because you're going to make jokes in your life and they're not going to like them and it's not going to be a good fit.
I've been on both sides, and the thing they're always looking for is culture fit. By the time you're in the room, they're not really asking you if you can do the job anymore.
Yeah.
So be yourself, because otherwise you're doing both sides a disservice.
Yeah. Well, that's incredibly helpful. This has been so fun. If people would like to learn more about you, they want to support you in some way or connect with you, what is the best way for people to find you online?
Find me on Twitter. That's the one I answer. It's at Koki Hasiotis. If you don't know how to spell that, take your best guess and I'll probably come up.
I'll link it. Don't worry.
Or you can visit lasagnaconsulting.com.
Awesome.
One last thing. Subscribe to FinTech Today and subscribe to the blog.
Perfect. Yes, that's perfect. We'll link to all those as well. Thank you so much, Koki.
Thanks so much for having me, Nate. This has been super fun.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Go give Koki a follow on Twitter. She's super fun to follow, always sharing really cool stuff. And check out Lasagna Consulting. If you're into banking, I don't know who listens to our podcast, but if you're thinking, hey, I need like a banking as a service consultancy, Koki is the person to go to. So thank you so much, Koki, for being on the show. That was really fun. And then in Voxter related news, the last episode of season one of the People of Growth podcast is coming out next week. And it's going to be a special episode. I hope that you'll tune in and check it out. We'll be giving you all the juicy details on what this year has been like for us and what is next. And this has been a lot of fun. It's been a fun episode, and I'm excited for you guys to hear the next one. So make sure to tune in next time. Make sure to go give Koki a follow on Twitter. And until next time, keep building.